All content discussed on Hypochondriac are the individual opinions of Dr. Priyanka Wally and Sean Hayes and should not be construed as personalized medical advice. By listening to this podcast, you agree not to use this podcast as medical advice to treat any medical condition in either yourself or others. Consult your own physician for any medical issues that you may be having. This entire disclaimer also applies to any guests or contributors to the podcast.
I'm Dr. Priyanka Wally, medical doctor and stand-up comedian.
And I'm Sean Hayes, actor and hypochondriac. It's safe to say that I'm not America's first hypochondriac, but I am America's first hypochondriactor. Hi, Priyanka. Good morning.
Hey, Sean. Good morning. It's so nice to see you.
You too. Where are you right now?
I'm in my place in Berkeley in the Bay Area. And you, it appears, are still in the rental unit in Chicago.
That is correct. I have five more days till I can go home. I'm excited.
Oh my gosh.
It'll be sad, bittersweet. I'll be sad to see everybody go and be done with the show, but we'll see what happens.
But it's going to be nice to be back in your own environment.
Yes.
With your own like familiar bed and your kitchen. And
if it doesn't work out, I'm coming to move in with you.
You can always move into this earthquake death trap that I live in. You are welcome here anytime.
I haven't stopped thinking about you taking clown lessons.
Yep.
And so how will you incorporate this clowniness into your life or your stand-up or whatever it is?
So it's already happening because I injured my neck. So I have been doing hella physical therapy since then. I'm like on a full neck healing regimen. And Sean, like, shit is coming up for me.
What do you mean?
Okay, so basically, I went to the physical therapist, and the reason I have arthritis in my neck is because I've spent my whole life hunched.
Yes, from stress.
From stress, from being in a like hypervigilant state basically my entire life.
Yes, and I didn't realize when you sleep hunched.
Yes. I totally do that because sometimes I wake up and I'm sore and I'm like, why do I feel like I worked out even though I was just laying here the whole night? So basically, we're working on getting my posture open.
Yeah.
And what has happened is that I'm noticing that just opening the posture like that is so radically different from my baseline, which is always hunched forward, hypervigilant.
Like Gollum, like from Lord
of
the Rings.
Like Gollum, yeah. I am Gollum incarnate.
Yes.
And basically, I'm just opening this up, and I'm telling you, Sean, like, all this stuff is coming up for me, like emotional stuff.
Really?
Fear.
From the physical therapy?
Just like the changing in the body, just changing the position. Like we worked on this thing last night where he just had me open my stance and he's like, how does this feel? And I was like, honestly, nothing is happening and I know I'm in a safe space, but this feels really uncomfortable and slightly scary.
Because you're so open.
Because I'm so open. It's so vulnerable.
Well, you know what you have to do next? You have to take karate lessons.
Oh, that's a great idea. You know who we should get on the show? What's his name from?
Ralph Macchio. By the way, he totally would.
Yeah. I'm sure he's gotten injured, like doing all the things that
he has. I'm sure. By the way, do you watch Cobra Kai?
Oh, hell yeah. I'm like way up to date.
It's fantastic.
I didn't know you were a Cobra Kai fan. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a little behind, but yeah. But the neck brace that you had, an incredible invention, that neck brace.
Oh my God, the neck collar? Yeah.
It's so simple.
I got it in France where I was doing clown school.
So it says Prada on it.
I mean, it was so chic. It was like...
It says Hermes.
Designer neck collar at the Le Pharmacie.
Oh, wow. I don't speak French, but I think that means drugstore.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, what do I know?
But wait, what do you think is the most meaningful scientific discovery that will happen in the next 10 years? What do you think is like cutting edge? I want to know all that stuff. We should talk about that every show because I love that stuff.
We really should. You know, the next 10 years, that's pretty short. I think in the next 500 years, human beings will realize the kind of power they have within their own minds to change their experiences. I'm sure you've heard the saying, like, life doesn't happen to you, it happens from you. And your perspective can basically change your entire experience. For example, when I hurt my neck in France, I could have been like, woe is me. But I was very much like, you know what? Every injury is an opportunity for healing. So what's going to heal now? So
like some brain shit's going to go on where we like communicate without talking, like telepathically, like the aliens were becoming aliens.
I mean, I would love to be an alien. I'm already weird. I'm already like halfway there. So I'm like the alien starter kit.
I could talk about that for hours, about like the power of the mind. I agree with you. We're going to live on Mars and we're going to like just not talk. It'd be so nice. Then we could have a podcast.
What do you think will be the biggest invention? Next 10 years, I don't think much is going to happen in the next 10 years. Maybe it will.
I was watching the beginning of this one documentary on some streamer, and they were talking about alien stuff because I love talking about alien stuff. Ancient Aliens on the History Channel. I love it. But think about it. As far as aviation and like airplane technology, in 100 years, it hasn't progressed.
Oh, that's true.
The amount of time it takes to get from New York to LA or whatever, or New York to London, is the exact same amount of time in a plane as it has always been.
I didn't know that.
So what's going on with that? I think it's like conspiracy. I think that...
Wait, what is the conspiracy?
Well, the conspiracy is like, you know, if you get too much technology, then how does that affect other businesses and the economy? And
oh,
so you have to kind of keep it down, right? That kind of thing. I believe in that.
Oh,
stuff. Wow.
Okay. I had no idea, Sean, that you were like into aliens and conspiracy stuff.
I love it.
A new side of you that I'm learning about. I think technology has moved faster than our bodies have evolved. So for example, like we have evolved to want to hunt and gather and search for food. And now we have technology where we can use our phones to order food in like half an hour and get it delivered straight to our door, requiring zero effort. But our biology hasn't evolved. Like we're still very much evolutionarily supposed to be exerting a lot of effort to get our food. So I think that puts us in a really precarious situation medically. Because
it's Wall-E.
The Disney movie Wall-E. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I mean, I would hope that in the next 10 years, maybe we can have a shift in that narrative where we start to honor our bodies and use technology to help, but not rely completely on technology so that our bodies get out of balance.
Yeah, because I can't even like, there's an update on my phone. What? I can't keep up with the technology. All right. Now, listen, before we get to our guest, who is...
Allison Brie?
Allison Brie! She's amazing. I can't believe she's here today. This is so exciting. Before we get to her and her brilliance, let's hear from our listeners. Our first recorded message is from somebody named Van.
Hey, Sean. Hey, Priyanka. My name is Van. Interesting story. In 2003, I started getting headaches, only on the left side of my head. They started getting worse over about a week. And one morning, I basically woke up with half my eye, my left eye, blind. Oof. And a giant gray sheen over it. And panicked, of course, went to an eye doctor, and the eye doctor looked in and said, you have toxoplasmosis, you probably got it at birth, and then treated it with a series of antibiotics over like 3 or 4 weeks and eye drops, and it was a mess. So to anyone who has frequent or sudden headaches, get it checked out, I guess.
Wow.
But also my question, if I can offer a question, is like, can this be dangerous in the future for me in other parts of my body? Can weird things happen? Or is it just stuck in my eye? Thanks.
Thank you, Van.
Yeah, thanks, Van, for sharing your story.
Sean, do you know about toxoplasmosis?
I don't, but it sounded like he was completely blindsided.
Oh, yes, he was. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That is the show. I'd like to remind you, this is a free podcast.
No, what happened? I'm obsessed with Van's story.
So toxoplasmosis caused by a parasite called Toxoplasma gondii. And this is really interesting. So people can have toxo.
What's the last part of that? Gondii. Oh, gondii.
Yeah, I actually don't know where that comes from. But most people that get toxo, there's different ways to get it. Okay, so it can come as a parasite in cat feces. So if you're like handling cat litter and then you don't wash your hands, or maybe you change the cat litter and then you go eat something, you can ingest the parasite. Sometimes if you have undercooked meat that's not cooked all the way through, it can have toxo
that's
in
not
it as
cat
well.
Litter.
Yeah, well, if you put cat litter on undercooked meat, you're probably going to get toxo.
So it's caused by a parasite and it causes blindness.
Well, it can. It can cause a whole bunch of neurological issues. So this is what's really interesting. Like most people can get toxo and have no symptoms whatsoever. But if something happens to the immune system that compromises the immune system, whether it's temporarily or chronically, then the toxo will activate and then it can cause these eye symptoms, ocular toxo. Sometimes it can even lead to abscesses in your brain. It can be very serious.
Well, we don't want to scare Van.
No, we don't. But if Van was sitting with me in my office, I would ask him what was going on around around the time that the symptoms started. Was there some kind of issue with your immune system that compromised it or caused the toxo to reactivate? Because basically it stays in your body and
it's
then
like dormant.
It reactivates. Yeah, it stays latent. So to answer Van's question, obviously I'm not giving personalized medical advice, but it stays latent in your body. So the best thing Van can do is keep their immune system as healthy as possible so that it doesn't reactivate.
Right. So is there any way to get rid of it?
You know, it's really something that just lies latent. But you can do a test called a toxo PCR, which basically determines your exposure and your risk of reactivation. It'll show you how much of the parasite is in the body.
Oh, wow. What if it was like test result came back and it's like, you have an 8-pound parasite in your body? That would be alien. So you see alien, we brought it back to alien.
Yes. Yes, we did. But here's the thing, like if you're going to eat meat, make sure you cook it to a really good temperature to kill the parasites. Or if you like eating your meat rare, medium rare, you have to freeze your meat at sub-zero temperatures for several days before eating it to kill off the parasites.
Oh, really? And then you can eat it rare. By the way, I can't stand anything.
You don't like your meat rare?
I don't trust it. I don't trust meat that's rare.
Oh, I love rare. Oh my gosh, I love like ribeyes medium rare. Like,
oh, it's disgusting.
Well, here's the other thing. If you do like handle meat or anything, wash your cutting board with warm soap and water after using it.
Yes.
Or another way is if you're going to garden and there are cats, maybe feral cats or your own cat, and they might poop in the soil, you got to make sure you wash your hands and wear gloves.
See, I wouldn't even think of that. That's good. Van, thank you for your message. That was great. We're going to go to a second message. This is from somebody named Cynthia. Let's listen.
Hey, Sean and Dr. Wally, love the show. My name is Cindy. I'm from the Philadelphia area. About 15 years ago, I was at a work function and I was all of a sudden doubled over in pain. So a colleague took me to the emergency room and they did an x-ray and a digital exam and they couldn't come up with anything. So I went to a specialist after that and I can't remember if she was a proctologist or a urologist, but she did a digital rectal exam and then sent me for a colonoscopy and just said that I was having a muscle spasm of the levator ani muscle. I believe that's what it was called. So since there was no other explanation, I kind of accepted that for a couple years. And every time I would have an episode, I would just take a bunch of Advil and wait it out. And sometimes I'd have to cancel my plans because it was so painful.
Aww.
So then one day I had a really strenuous bike ride with friends. And when I came home, I had the worst pain ever. The worst episode ever. I wound up in a different emergency room and they did a vaginal ultrasound and confirmed that I actually had a complex cyst on my ovary and I had a rupture. So after all those years, I finally got the right diagnosis and then I continued to have follow-up ultrasounds to keep an eye on it. My doctor was like, we want to make sure this doesn't turn cancerous or anything or get worse. So some time has gone by. Maybe my body's outgrown it because I'm older. But I just wanted to share my story with you because I was misdiagnosed all those years and it was very frustrating. And all it took was for someone to say, hey, let's do a vaginal ultrasound.
Yeah.
So anyway, love the show. Thank you so much.
Wow, what a story. I'll tell you who didn't do the vaginal thing.
You?
Yeah, I did not do that.
You know what was interesting about Cindy's story? Did you catch how when Cindy was like, yeah, I couldn't tell if they were a proctologist or a urologist, but they did a rectal exam. It's just like, I don't know who you are, but I know you put your finger
on
my
butt. Or if I was at a gas station, I didn't know where I was, if it was a hospital or like a grocery store or a Starbucks. But yeah, I think that's wild.
But there's so much about what Cindy's saying, which is, I mean, gosh, where do I begin?
If you're going to do a rectal exam or whatever, why wouldn't you just do the whole gambit when you're that first doctor and go through all the tests? And meanwhile, there's a cyst in there. Jesus, God.
The reality, Sean, and we've talked about this on other episodes, women's pain aren't taken seriously, right? There was actually a study that came out just last year where they took perceivers, so kind of generic perceivers, and they were asked to rate people's pains. And so they looked at video clips of female and male patients with shoulder pain, and then they had to estimate what they thought their pain intensity was.
Uh-huh.
And basically, the finding was that they underestimated the female patient's pain compared to the male patients. And then there was another study where they basically were trying to judge what type of treatment would be required for for the male versus female patients. And the perceivers judged that the female patients were more likely to benefit from psychotherapy, whereas the male patients were more likely to benefit from pain medicine.
Wow.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be like that.
It shouldn't.
If you're sick, you should get help. Yeah.
Yeah, no. So this was from the Journal of Pain, which is an interesting title. Oh,
I wonder what it's about.
Yeah. So, I mean, we can do better to stop underestimating the pain in female patients, right?
Well, Cindy, I hope you're feeling better. My God.
Yeah. And I'm glad you got that solved and figured out now. I'm sorry it took so long, but yeah, thanks for calling with that story.
Yeah, guys, if you have a story, please share with us. The number to leave us a message is 1-323-529-6031. Again, 1-323-529-6031. Keep sharing your stories. We love to hear from you. Let's get to our guest. We are supported by Athletic Greens. So I know what you're thinking. What is this stuff? Well, with one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. All the things. That's why I talk so fast. Can't you tell? So anyway, I started taking Athletic Greens because it saves time. I know I'm getting everything I want. It's super fast and it tastes delicious. I love it. It's lifestyle friendly whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free. AG1 is a small micro habit with big benefits. It's one thing you can do every single day to take great care of yourself. It costs you less than $3 a day. You're investing in your health and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/hypo. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/hypo to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
We are sponsored by Brightland, a California-based company that offers fresher, healthier olive oils and vinegars made only from the freshest local harvests, grown without pesticides, never overprocessed, and made without fillers or artificial preservatives.
Listen, I don't cook a lot, but when I do, I always use olive oil.
Yeah, totally.
So Brightland's Duo Olive Oil Combo, my veggies taste better than ever. They're more flavorful. And I know that it's good for you. And I love the taste of olive oil.
Brightland only works with small California-based family-run farms. And I love that. Their partner farms use no herbicides or pesticides that harm workers and the planet. And they pay all their workers fair and legal wages.
Only the most recent olive harvest goes into Brightland oil. Olives are harvested early in the season and pressed within 90 minutes of harvest for the highest quality oil possible. With the best flavor.
Brightland oils are shipped right to you in recyclable bottles that are coated to protect the oils from UV light damage.
If you love to cook, Brightland has you covered with the Duo, a well-rounded pair of extra virgin olive oils that will elevate any dish. The Duo consists of Awake and Alive.
Go to brightland.co/hypo to try the Duo and give your cooking some added flair and flavor. That's brightland.co/hypo to save 10% on your order of the Duo. Thanks, Brightland, for sponsoring this podcast.
Our guest today is an actor, writer, and producer. She's known for iconic roles in Mad Men, Community, BoJack Horseman, and Glow. My God. Her new show, Roar, is streaming now on Apple TV+. Please welcome the always charming Alison Brie.
What an intro.
Welcome.
This is Priyanka, Allison,
very
Sean.
Nice
Sean,
to meet
Allison.
You.
Nice to meet
Such you. Such a fan.
I know, I'm a huge fan. But wait, now listen. Most people are like lucky to be involved on one big hit show. Like big show after big show after big show after big show. How do you pick these projects? Like, do you just get lucky? There's no way. You must read the script and you're like, I have to read the script. I have to know character, arc, story, who's behind it.
Well, you know, for Community and Mad Men, it was just luck because those were two of my first jobs.
Major luck.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Well, especially Mad Men, because when I auditioned for the show, it wasn't on the air yet. It was the first scripted show on AMC. So like the script was really good, but it was like, well, I don't know if this is going to be a thing. Is anyone going to watch this show?
Right.
But I really like, you know, fought hard for the role, I feel like. And then Community was just such a random, truly, I just was auditioning for every pilot And that was one of them. So it was, I just got lucky.
Now you're fucking Alison Brie. That's huge. It's so great.
And now looking at new shows is terrifying. Like you said, everything I read, I'm like, oh God, is it the one?
That's right.
Interesting.
Wait, tell me about Roar. I haven't seen it.
Oh my God, Roar. It's fantastic. It's an anthology series. So it's 8 episodes starring 8 different women, written by 8 different women, directed by 8 different women. It's like this feminist powerhouse show.
Oh, cool.
And each episode has sort of a magical surrealism to it, a bit of dark comedy, and they all have to do with the female experience, but sort of taking them to like their furthest, like they take ordinary women and we put them in like very extraordinary circumstances. So my episode is called The Woman Who Solved Her Own Murder, and I play a ghost.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Neat.
I'm in Chicago. I haven't seen the sun in like 7 months. I look like a ghost. I could have played your part.
You do look eerily like my character on the show.
So translucent. My business partner, Todd, calls me a human bounce card. That's how white I am. So wait, Roar, so did you starring in it or did you also write and direct one of them? Or
No, I'm only starring in it.
Yeah, I know, right?
But yeah. It's created by Liz Flahive and Carly Mensch, who created Glow. So this was a really easy decision where I got a phone call from them right after Glow had been sort of unceremoniously canceled during COVID.
That was such a great show.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And they were like, we're doing this show. Nicole Kidman is an EP on it. She's going to be starring in one of the episodes. We have Cynthia Erivo, Issa Rae attached to other episodes. Do you want to do an episode? We wrote one for you. I was like, yeah.
Wow.
Y'all do it.
That's so cool. Jackie Tone, I've known for several years. She was on Glow.
Everybody knows Jackie.
Yeah, right? She's crazy. She's hilarious.
She's been around for years. I feel like every Hollywood event I go to, people are like, I know Jackie.
Now, listen, people in our business, we meet people who wear many hats like you do. You do all of these things. Yes. You write and direct and star. And people don't understand, like, I'm drawn to people like you who are, like, ambitious and driven and want to have something to say. And when you do have something to say, it's important and it's interesting. Mm-hmm. And no, it is. It's true. You co-wrote it with your husband, right?
Yes.
And it's coming out this year?
Yes, I think so. We're still in post on it now.
Oh, you already shot it?
Yes, we shot it at the end of last year, sort of in the fall of last year up in Portland, Oregon, and a little bit in Leavenworth, Washington. And basically, you know, my husband, a few years ago, he wrote and directed his first film, The Rental, and I acted in it. And
for people who don't know, your husband is Dave Franco.
My husband's name is Dave Franco. He's an actor, writer, director extraordinaire. And so that was his directorial debut. And we had acted together before in a couple projects, but we had never worked together in that capacity, obviously. It was his first time directing.
Yeah.
And it was so wonderful. It was just the best collaborating experience of my life.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it really was. It was like, I can't express enough, I think, how just... Because I know him better than anyone, and he knows me so well, and we trust each other so much.
And respect.
And respect each other. And it ended up being really nice, I think, also for both of us to have each other on set. You know, mm-hmm. I felt very aware of, like, this is Dave's first time directing, and I don't want to be, like, an annoying actress who has actor issues. I want to be, like, super helpful, sounding board on set.
Wow.
That's so true, because, so I produce some stuff, too, and when I'm producing, I'm like, I don't want to deal with crazy actors. And then I'm in something as an actor, I turn into a crazy person.
So totally. Totally. And in a way, that's why it was really freeing for me, too, where I was like, oh, wait, I can just turn off any neurotic actor bullshit that I have. Like, it was like the most calm and confident I've ever felt.
How did you deal with that, though? Like, if you had a question about your character or motivation or inspiration or anything, did you have that kind of checking yourself in your brain? Or like, well, I don't want to do this in front of my husband where I turn into like this thing that we become.
Well, that was the other thing, I think, is that communication on set was actually really easy. Because if Dave's written a movie, you know, it's sort of written in his voice.
Yeah.
And he and I, not to make it sound like we're not our own people, but you know, when you're with, we've been together 10 years. You share a language. You share a sense of humor.
Yeah. Yes.
So like, it just was so easy. Actually, if there ever were notes on set, I feel like we would joke because it was like an unspoken language where he'd run on set and be like, babe. And I'd be like, I know. And he'd be like, okay, let's go again.
That's great. I love that. So would you do it again?
So this is the whole point is that, so he wrote that. And while I was sort of watching him write that and put that movie together, and I wrote my first feature with my writing partner, Jeff Baena, and it's called Horse Girl. It's on Netflix. You can watch it. I star in it and Jeff directed it.
God. Look so at that you was go. Sort of like,
awesome. It was, I was sort of inspired by Dave watching that happen. And then we both finished these projects that we had written. And we had such a good time on the rental that we were like, let's just write another one together that we can make together. And we were home, we were in his hometown for Christmas a couple years ago. And on a walk home, we just started to brainstorm an idea. And then the lockdown happened and we just wrote it.
Do you have kids?
We don't have kids.
Okay.
So this is why.
I'm looking at you like, who just like, I'll just go write this and then film it and it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
Like, who does that? It's crazy. That's so cool.
Horse Girl's on Netflix. We shot somebody I used to know for Amazon. So hopefully that'll be coming out later this year. And I wrote another movie during quarantine also with Jeff Baena called Spin Me Round, which we just premiered at South by Southwest. And I think that will be coming out later this summer.
Alison Brie, because you love it. You love all aspects.
I guess. I don't know. Sometimes the writing process is difficult. Like, Sean, you write. Yeah, it's hard.
I like the hard work, like you're saying, is breaking the story, writing the outline. It's so much work. But then when you go to script, it's super fun.
Definitely. Even though you get lots of notes and you're always like, what? What is this note? And then you sit with it and you go like, oh, it's going to make it better.
Yeah, I know. You always fight it.
Yeah, I guess I just have to do some more work, but it is going to make it better.
You play this game with network executives. That is a wonderful note. I'm going to look at that. And then you just don't.
And then you just don't. I mean, yeah. I mean, a little bit of both.
Yeah, a little bit of both.
I found it very empowering to make my own work and get to like, write the roles that then I get to play. And so that's been really fulfilling. And I never thought that I would be a writer ever. I've always loved acting since I was a kid and did plays and did theater. I've loved acting and never thought about doing any other side of it. And then on Glow, I directed an episode of Glow and then I directed another thing. I started to go like, oh, I just think you work in the business long enough. If you have any kind of curiosity about the other aspects of it,
right.
It's like dip a toe in and see.
You're fucking amazing. So now listen to this. When you, that's just so impressive.
Thanks,
when
John.
When you do quote only act in something, right?
Yes.
Isn't it kind of like, oh, this is nice. I don't have to deal with the producing and the direct. Like all I have to do is know my stuff, which is a lot of work, but I just have to focus on this one thing.
It's like, so I directed an episode of Glow in our third season. And then the very next week, like coming to set for the next episode that I wasn't directing, I actually felt the opposite where I was almost kind of bored and I wanted to be more now I was like back in the IT tent being like, so what's the shot? What do you guys, it's none of my business. Then on the next thing after that, that I only acted in, I could tell with the director, I was a little bit like, oh, what are you lining up? Oh, what are that? Oh, did you ever think about, maybe what if we cut to? Like, I was like, you're overstepping. Like, you're being annoying. I could feel myself being a little annoyed.
It's got to be hard because you have your ideas and...
Or I just was trying to be helpful. I was just sort of like, any ideas, what I learned you as a director is any idea is a good idea. And should we workshop this? Seeing I'm not in, like, you know, but... After this last year where it was back-to-back, my movie with Jeff Baena is called Spin Me Round, and then Dave and I shot these movies back-to-back where I was, like, the star in every scene and also a producer, and I had also written it, and, like, it was so full-on that then I just went and shot something in Colombia where I was just acting, and there was so much out of my control and, like, so many crazy things going on with the schedule, and I was, like... So relieved. I was just like, it's none of my business. That's none of my business.
I'm in my hotel room. Right. Knock on my door. Yeah, exactly.
Let me know what my pickup time is tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll see you then.
And bring a donut. Let's get to the good stuff, which is, I want to know your story. All I know is you hit your head, and I'll let you say it, and something went horribly wrong. And how old were you? What happened? All of that.
Yeah, let's get to it. Yeah.
Yes. So the story is about, well, I want to give the headline rather than build suspense. The story is about me going blind when I was 7 or 8 years old.
Uh-huh.
I asked my mom, I've always had this as 7 in my mind. And she was like, maybe you were 8. And I was like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean.
The point is, I'm in elementary school. To set it up, I was a really petite kid. I was like really skinny and little. People thought I was a preemie, but I wasn't. I just looked up real malnourished for some reason.
Even at 7 or 8.
Yes, still. I was like really skinny. People like my parents like, what are you guys? Yeah. But anyway, So I was on the after school playground where my sister and I would often wait until our parents got off work to pick us up. Mm-hmm. And I was just running across the playground, not looking, and I bumped into another little girl in my class who was like four times bigger than me. Mm-hmm. Bumped into her, fell straight backwards, and hit the back of my head on the concrete.
Okay.
So my older sister was there, thank God. So she's 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. And she gets me and she's like, well, let me take you up to the nurse's office. Mm-hmm. And as I'm walking up to the nurse's office, I just feel a little out of it. I clearly mm-hmm. had a concussion, but mm-hmm. I don't know this at 7 or 8, but I just feel kind of out of it and foggy, mm-hmm. but I can still see. Mm-hmm. And she walks me up to the nurse's office and the nurse is not there. It's after school. And the women in the office are like, just go lay her down and have her close her eyes. Which, by the way,
you're not supposed to do after a head injury. You're not supposed to put someone to sleep after they hit their head.
The worst.
Yeah.
They put us in a dark room. Yeah. These women in the office, she hit her head. Well, just lay her down and have her close her eyes.
Wow. Meanwhile, the girl you ran into, she's fine.
She was not even, like, didn't flinch. Stood like a pillar, like, going, and
so
I just, like,
ricocheted off of this person.
Yes.
But wait, sorry to interrupt. Why is that the worst thing you can do? Because if you have a head injury, what?
Yeah, so after someone has a head injury, depending on the type of injury, and so you want to keep the person awake because if they lose consciousness, it could be a sign that there's more serious underlying bleeding. If you put them to sleep, you don't know at what point did they start to lose consciousness.
Oh, God.
So, and you need to get like a CAT scan and you need to go to the emergency room if you're starting to lose consciousness after you've hit your head. Yeah.
Good God. Okay, so you lay down.
So I lay down, I don't lose consciousness, but I start to ask my sister the same questions over and over.
Okay.
And remember, this is a 7 or 8 year old and a 9 or 10 year old.
Yeah.
We're two
So your
little
sister
girls
was
alone.
With you at the nursing station. Okay.
Yes, my sister brought me up there. She comes back into the room with me and she's sitting there and she's telling them to call my parents. And, you know, this is the early 90s, not cell phones or anything. So then so they're trying to get a hold of my parents. And I start to repeat, what happened? And my sister's like, well, you fell and hit your head on the playground. We're in the nurse's office. And I go, oh, okay. And then we'd lay there for a minute and I'd be like, what happened? Where are we?
Oh, no.
So she starts to freak out.
Oh, my
gosh.
But
my sister, even at 10 years old, has always been like the boss of the family. Like,
oh, wow.
So she comes into this office. She's like, what's going on? You haven't gotten a hold of my parents yet?
Oh, wow.
She gets on the phone. She starts making calls. We can't reach my mom. She's at work. She's on some meeting. We get a hold of my dad finally. So my dad comes to pick me up. My dad arrives, and I sort of don't remember anything. Like, the next part of my memory is I'm in the back seat of my dad's car, and boom, I can't see.
Oh, wow.
Thing.
And so it's like black or is it all white? Like
it's sort of like how when you close your eyes, it's black, but you can a little bit see
light.
If someone's like putting their hand in front of your face, some shadows and things like that. But I must have looked insane. I'm hysterical. I start hysterically crying because I could feel myself trying to open my eyes as wide as possible.
That
and I
so
couldn't
scary.
See anything.
Oh my God,
anything.
I'm getting nauseous. Yeah. Okay, keep going. Yeah.
So my dad's trying to calm me down. I'm hysterically crying. They put me in the back seat. And now the cool thing too is, I mean, like, this is also at this point 30 years ago. It's a story that I've told myself so many times. So a lot of these memories, I'm like, is that still a real memory or just the memory?
Look, if
that
it makes
I
the story better, it's real.
I told?
No. Well, regardless of the facts, you remember the emotions. You remember what you felt.
The cool thing is also that I remember the other sensory stuff. Like none of the memories from this point on are visual because I couldn't see. So I remember like touching the seat and the back of my dad's car, like the leather seat and the stitching. And like I was laying on my side. I'm hysterically crying. The car's moving. My dad's like frantically trying to get me to the hospital.
Are you telling him that, Dad, I can't see. I can't see.
Yes. And screaming it.
Yeah.
Like my poor dad is like, who knows what's going on? And I don't know how he's reacting because I can't see him. So finally, I'm like lulling myself, touching the leather stitching on the back seat of the car. I finally calm down. I hear a screech. My body goes flying off of the seat. My dad got into a car accident on the way to the hospital.
God.
I think it was like a small fender bender.
Jeez.
But maybe I was not wearing a signs point to I wasn't wearing a seatbelt. You know, I was thrown in the back seat. It was like,
well, you couldn't see the seatbelt to put it on.
I don't know. So I go rolling onto the floor. Now I'm screaming again. My dad's like, Oh God, I can hear him talking. It sounds like it was like a relatively small fender bender, but he had had to slam the brakes because I'm freaking out.
Holy crap.
So my dad has to pull over to the side of the road. I'm hysterical still. I'm wide-eyed, like, ah, in the back of this car. Uh-huh. My dad calls his friend who comes and picks us up. And all I remember is his like very deep, soft voice. He had big, soft hands. He like lifted me. It was very calming, but I could hear, uh-huh. I knew he had a van. I could like hear the sliding door uh-huh. of a van opening.
That could have gone a different way. Yeah.
Well, I know. I know. The whole
just
thing.
Saying. It's creepy.
The whole thing. I know. Yeah. I'm like the soothing man's voice and his large hands and body. Oh my God. Put me in the van. Back of his van. And my sister comes with, because my dad's like, go with your sister. Thank uh-huh. God. The guy drops us off at the hospital and leaves.
Oh, what? But the you're guy blind.
Drops a blind little girl and my sister. My sister's guiding me through the hospital.
Yeah.
And oh now this part God. I don't really remember again. I know they did a CAT scan on uh-huh. me. And I think they did knock me out because okay. I was just too
like
I,
they gave upset. You like a sedative or something.
Yes. And yeah. they told my parents, if her vision doesn't come back in 12 hours, she'll likely be blind for the rest of her life.
You're joking me.
No.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, that, my God.
Did you hear when they told your parents that? Were you in the room when they said that?
No. It's okay. The next thing I remember is I wake up. It's been about 10 hours.
Yeah.
I wake up in a hospital bed and my parents like shoot towards me in my hospital bed like, they're hysterical.
Yeah.
Can you see me? Which to me, and at this point, I sort of have no recollection. You know, I'd like wake up.
You're like, unfortunately, yes.
I can see everybody. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, and your breath
and you look awful.
Like you're too close to my face.
And my nose works too. Yeah.
You're a little close. So basically, that was the whole thing. Then they kept, like, then it was just back.
Wow. Yeah,
my vision was back. They kept me at the hospital a couple days for observation. And then I even feel like for a few days after that, I could never sleep through the night. My parents would wake me up every couple hours to check my vision.
And you just make a placard that just, you just hold it up and it says, I'm good.
I'm good.
Like, right. So you don't have to speak.
So you're describing an event. This seems like of life-changing proportions. Like how did your perspective as 7-year-old Allison change after going through something like this?
It sounds so lame, but I do think like I'm constantly taking in visuals of things all the time.
Wow.
Like I was just shooting this movie and somebody kept making fun of me because I was like, the clouds behind you, they look incredible. It's so beautiful here. Mm-hmm. And he turns around and he was like, you mean there by those like shitty apartments? Yeah. I was like, yeah, but like they're beautiful in their own way.
Yes. So you're just more appreciative. Yeah.
We are supported by Masterworks.
Florida man back at it again. Have you seen this headline, Sean?
Yeah, Florida man buys a $3,500 painting.
And it's got JC in it, our boy Jesus Christ.
For sure. And you like this, Priyanka? He's surrounded by doctors of all things.
But 8 years later, believe it or not,
Florida man sees a familiar signature on the back.
So he hires an art historian to examine it.
And guess how much it's worth?
$100? $150?
No.
Try $150 million.
That's right, because that signature was from freaking Leonardo da Vinci.
Right. So I Googled this to see if it's just a one-off.
Apparently, it's happening all the time.
Art is hot, hot, hot.
Hot, hot, hot. It's like a photo of me. I don't know about you, but...
Look, if Florida man can make millions from art...
We're probably in the wrong profession. Am I right?
The story continues at masterworks.art/hypo. See important Regulation A disclosures at masterworks.io/CD. Again, check out the rest of the story at masterworks.art/hypo. We are supported by Best Fiends.
I love it. I love gaming. I'm totally addicted. I play tons of games. But Best Fiends is really, really one of the best. It's super, super fun. When you're looking for like me time, that's what I do. Mm. I do it at the end of the day. I sit down and I play some games. First one I open is Best Fiends. I love the animation. I love how easy it is. It's so satisfying and it's addictive in the best way.
What I love is that it's free to download.
I love that too. You don't have to pay for it.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's got over 100 million downloads. I didn't know
that's
that.
That's wild.
But I can't put it down. It's like I'm obsessed.
Once you download Best Fiends, you can play anywhere, even without an internet connection, which is great if you're stuck without Wi-Fi or like on a plane or something.
Collect tons of fiends that get powered up as you play more levels. Every win brings new challenges, thousands of puzzles to play.
New in-game events are added all the time.
With thousands of levels, there's always more to play. So go ahead and let enough is never enough be your mantra.
Download Best Fiends for free from the Apple Store or Google Play. Plus, even earn more with $5 worth of in-game rewards when you reach level 5. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. Do you get your eyes checked every single year on the dot now because of what happened, or has your relationship with your eye health changed?
No, never. In fact, I think I only got my eyes checked last year or the year before last because they were going to make contacts for me for a job. It was like, like, oh yeah, how is my vision these days? She was like, it's almost 20/20. It's like 20 and 19 and three quarters.
Oh,
I was
wow.
like, great. I've had great vision ever since.
That's amazing. Wow. That's amazing.
Well, just have one question, actually. What about, like, are you super careful now about watching out for head trauma or, like, you know, after going through that, like, do you always wear helmets, like, when you ride a bike? Or I don't know. Like, how do you feel
first
about the NFL
all,
now?
First of all, I don't ride bikes. That terrifies me. It's a real problem in my relationship because Dave used to really love, like, riding bikes. And it's like, if we go on vacation, he's like, we should take out some bikes for the day. I'm like, no, I don't do that. That does seem dangerous.
Has that experience made you more apprehensive of anything like that or no?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I honestly think it was more like a running joke when I was younger that I was so adventurous. Like, this is not my only head injury story from same time period. I also got stitches in the front of my head because I was at my neighbor's house and jumped off some flight of stairs and, like, tripped and hit my head on the concrete. I kind of was hitting my head all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't think that has changed. I'm still sort of, I mean, like, GLOW is a great example where they wanted us to do our own stunts on the show. And I was like, yes! You know, the whole thing with GLOW was like, everything is kind of scary. You're diving headfirst at everybody all the time.
Yeah, that's crazy. Uh-huh. I can't believe
you guys
did that.
And you have to do it 100%. Like, you can't do it halfway or then it becomes way more dangerous. Yeah.
I don't know how you guys do that. But wait, Priyanka, what happens in Allison's case, what happens in the brain? Is it the impact of the concrete that does something to the eyes, or is it something that she hit in the brain that's connected?
Yeah, the medical term for what happened to you is called amaurosis fugax. Amaurosis is the Greek word for meaning dark, and fugax is the Latin word for fleeting. And basically, it's the transient loss of vision in one or both of your eyes. And there was actually an article in the New England Journal of Medicine that was published in 1968 where they had 7 kids from the age of 6 to 16 that had transient total blindness after seemingly trivial blunt head trauma. And many of them had similar presentations to what you are describing, Allison, where they had a hit to the back of the head. They then were fine immediately after the hit, then they kind of walked around or sat down and then suddenly were unable to see. And they described these case reports of these young kids who, like, were hysterical. Like, they were, like, moving their hands in front of their face and they couldn't see. And when they were left alone, they would just be, like, sobbing. They did brainwave scans of these kids and they basically found that the brainwave activity slowed. It was generalized slowing. So the theory is that after the insult, the brain gets hit, it sort of goes into a shock mode and the brainwave activity just goes down. And because of the location of the injury, whether it's the back of the head, that somehow gets stunned and temporarily shuts off. And after things like the swelling goes down, the nerve goes back online. So it's almost like kind of hitting a reset button And eventually then the vision came back on all of these kids and they had no residual issues. So it's a very rare observance, but yeah, it's
that's amazing.
It's happened. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess they had told us that it was that the optic nerve was bruised or jostled because it was right back there. But the swelling thing makes the most sense. I mean, but then why do you think, was it just that they don't know that if I had been blind, like the 12-hour window is so specific.
Yeah, I'm not sure where they came up with that number. That is a really specific, like it's very Cinderella
like,
of them.
By the time I eat lunch tomorrow, she'll
like
be able to see or not.
Sorry, you missed the boat. Like no eyesight for you. That's a bit hysterical.
But oh
first
God.
Of all, I just want to say, if you could go, can you remember going back into that moment where you, now you're like in hour one of blindness, what was 7-year-old Allison thinking at that moment about like her life, her future, herself?
I just think it was the most terrifying thing I had experienced. And it was very, and mostly confusing.
Yeah.
Because like I said, I always wonder what I looked like. Because I know I was hysterical. Uh-huh. I remember the panic.
Yeah.
And just the not understanding, because I couldn't look in a mirror or anything. I'm in the backseat of this car, like just trying even manually to open my eyes as wide as possible. It was like wasn't computing.
Yeah.
And I think that was part of the hystericalness too, was like, oh my God, like realizing that I was blind and then sort of just being like, now I'm just blind?
Yeah. Do you ever get, and feel free to not answer this, but do you ever get triggered now years later? Like if you're in a dark room and you don't know, like...
You can't see.
If you were, I don't know. Are there ever situations that kind of reactivate this old trauma?
That's so interesting because I am kind of afraid of the dark and I've never connected the dots ever. I've always just been like, I'm kind of scared. When I watch a horror movie, then I get scared of the dark. I'm scared of darkness. But I've always thought I'm kind of a pussy for this fear of the dark.
Like in the middle of the night when you wake up to pee or you wake up and the room is dark, is that a trigger?
Well, our bedroom, I feel like we don't have total darkness because a little bit of the light from like our outside lights seeps in.
Yeah.
But I do, I mean, I don't know. I do like to sleep in total darkness. I think it's like, if it's against my will, like if I'm with someone and we're going into some room and they close
like
the door, so then it's
gagged.
Total blackness.
Yeah.
If I'm getting put in the back of a van, by a
against my will, I don't like
triggering.
That.
I don't know. Because I like to sleep, especially when I'm working. I like to have blackout curtains. I wear a sleep mask.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But if I'm with someone and they turn off the lights and I'm like, no, hey.
Yeah. That's so interesting. But wow, thank you for talking about that. I mean, that can't, I mean, just to bring up those old memories. I mean, I really appreciate you kind of going to that spot. That's a very kind of scary spot to
sure. You know, it's a wild, I honestly haven't thought about it in a long time.
Yeah.
And even
when
I told my husband, Dave, that I was doing this podcast, he was like, what are you going to talk about? And I was like, oh, this time when I went blind as a kid. And he was like, what? I must have told him the story, but it was like because I was just on a set, and you know when you're on set and you're talking about random stuff, and somebody asked me if I had ever been in a CAT scan machine, and I was like, oh yeah, once, but I was blind, so I didn't really, you know, I was, and then I started telling the story.
Uh-huh.
This was just like, you know, a month ago or something, so it was like kind of fresh in my mind that I suddenly was like, oh, yeah. And then my dad got in this car accident.
Yes, and it all
comes back. It is kind of a wild story.
It's a very incredible story.
Yeah, I mean, that's
it's not
wild.
Just going blind, but then getting in an accident blind. I mean, the whole thing. Yeah.
When you were saying that, my brain went to like, I wonder how often that happens when a parent or anybody is racing somebody they love to a hospital and they get in a car accident. Like, remember Fatal Attraction? Glenn Close kidnaps the kid. She takes the kid.
Right.
And then the mom's freaking out and she's driving. She's freaking out looking for her son. She gets a massive accident.
Oh, right.
Yes. Anyway, but I don't know why I just thought
of that. Yeah, so Allison, basically your life is like Fatal Attraction.
I've always suspected this.
That's the moral of this story here.
All right, let's play a game.
So let's play the game now. So it's called Dr. Wally's Hall of Fame. You're each going to get three questions each. And if you don't know the answer, take a wild guess because I will give possible points for creativity. Sean, you're up first. Are you ready, Sean?
I'm born.
Great. First question. What is the name of the medical condition that occurs when proteins in the eye form clumps, which prevents the normal movement of light through the eye, and it results in a visual clouding of the lens
okay.
of your eye?
All right. Well, I finally got an easy one. Thank you. Every episode, she asks me, like, you need a Harvard degree from whatever. That's either glaucoma or cataract.
The answer is cataract, yes.
What's the correct. Difference?
Well, glaucoma has nothing to do with the lens of the eye. Glaucoma is increased pressure inside of the
eye.
Oh, glaucoma
is the pressure.
Cataract, though, is where you have clouding of the lens.
I have a little bit on my right.
Okay. I know. We've Uh-oh. Talked about that. Yeah. Okay, so second question for Sean. In social media slang, what does AMA stand for?
In social media, AMA?
Yeah.
America makes, I don't know, a messy asshole. I don't know. What does it mean?
It means ask me anything.
Oh, all right.
Much cleaner definition.
AMA means ask me anything?
Ask okay. me anything, yeah. Question three for Sean. Who did you make out with on stage at the 64th Annual Tony Awards?
Oh, well, of course, Kristen Chenoweth.
Okay, you took a minute yes,
and there. And then afterwards, the joke was, what was the joke? Oh, it was, I know what you're all thinking. She's too short for me.
Oh, I love that.
So stupid.
Okay, Allison, you're up next. Are you ready?
Yes.
First question. In medicine, what does the medical term acute mean?
You know, like, it's like happening. Like, it just happened.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
acute trauma.
Very good.
That's good looking.
Well, that's not correct, Sean. So acute means that it is severe, sudden onset. I'll take that. Oh. It's happening. Yeah.
I thought acute meant like a smaller injury, not a
no,
big
No, that's like a cutie. That's like
okay,
cute.
Okay, got it.
So that's like
no.
a okay. cutie, that's like one of those
different.
Oranges.
That's not. That
yes.
you
oh
just
my God,
said.
I love
yeah.
those.
Okay, second question for Allison. In popular slang, what does the acronym YOLO stand for?
You only live once.
Oh, that's
that
right.
Is correct. Yes.
That's right. I just learned that like a month ago.
I can't believe I knew both the internet slang
I
terms,
know.
You guys.
Yes, you do.
You're making me feel young.
Allison, third question. During a school debate in the first season of Community, how does your character Annie prove that man is evil and win the debate?
Oh, by kissing Joel McHale yes. and making him drop the kid that was in a wheelchair.
That is correct. Allison, you have won by landslide.
Allison,
you slayed
won!
It.
Wow. Yes. I'm a genius?
You are.
Yes, you
You're,
are.
And super talented and just all the things.
You are amazing. Allison, thank you for being on the show. You are amazing. My God, what you've accomplished, what you're going to accomplish. Keep going. It's so great.
Much. Yes,
thank
and
you
thank
so
you so
much
for sharing
me.
Your medical story. It's such an important story to share and very riveting. So thank you.
Well, this was a blast. Thanks for having me, you guys.
Thanks, sweetie.
Yeah. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
How great is she?
That was amazing. What a story. Whew.
Yeah.
And
by the way,
sweating.
But back to the career for a second.
Oh,
for,
yeah. You know, talent, talent, talent.
Screw the blind thing for a second. That was just like, she's what?
Very prolific. She's
oh
very prolific.
Oh, my God. I had
yeah,
no idea.
I know. And I know we were joking like, oh, like it was luck, but it's really not luck. Like you manifest kind of like what
I totally agree.
What's kind of you're made of. So I'm just so impressed.
I agree too, because you have to have the talent, right? There's so many mm-hmm. people with the talent, but like you're saying, you have to then have that other thing, which is the drive and
the mood,
and
the
savviness
momentum.
Of to recognize what's, you know, Will and Grace was totally luck. Because I was just
oh,
like,
no.
yeah, no, it was.
You have the Allison Brie momentum too. You
no,
are
well,
prolific
I,
as well.
I can only wish. But anyway, guys, thanks for listening today. We really, really, really appreciate you and
yes,
your
and
ears.
Yes, and thank you to our callers as well,
yes.
Van and Cindy, for calling in. Super
yes.
interesting stuff.
Until next time, you guys, don't worry. Be healthy. Bye.
Bye.
Hypochondriac Actor is a Hazy Mills production hosted by me, Sean Hayes, and Dr. Priyanka Wally. Rebecca Eisenberg and Todd Milliner are our executive producers. Production and editing is by Rabbit Grin Productions. Original music by Scott Eisenogle and Leo Rosner. This is a Hazy Mills production. All content discussed on Hypochondriac are the individual opinions of Dr. Priyanka Wally and Sean Hayes and should not be construed as personalized medical advice. By listening to this podcast, you agree not to use this podcast as medical advice to treat any medical condition in either yourself or others. Please consult your own physician for any medical issues that you may be having. This entire disclaimer also applies to any guests or contributors to the podcast.